Welcome to Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Riley Kandel. In today's episode, we spoke with Michael J. Morrow, MD. In our exclusive interview, Dr. Morrow discussed the vast assortment of TKIs available for the treatment of patients with chronic myeloid leukemia, in addition to breaking down numerous different TKIs that he turns to in clinical practice and their accompanying data. Morrow also dissected the November 2025 FDA approval of generic dasatinib tablets for patients with CML and acute lymphoblastic leukemia. More specifically, Morrow outlined what this approach means for patients who need concomitant gastric acid-reducing agents like proton pump inhibitors. How do you specifically approach TKI selection and sequencing for CML? Are there certain methods you follow, specific subset of patients that you pay attention to?
Managing a patient with CML at present in 2026 is, we call it a spoil of riches. We have a number of different choices, and a lot depends on where you're at in the course of things. Probably the most important decision is how to choose a frontline therapy, which we have actually multiple approved options. We actually have five approved frontline options. So we have some pretty compelling data from a recent study called the Ask for First trial, which looked for superiority for asciminib. Was that the case over imatinib or our other choices, second generation TKIs? And that was the case. I think in a well-designed trial, we saw that asciminib probably offers a lower adverse effect profile and superior response, which puts it at the top of our list. There are some questions that some people have regarding long-term safety, which I think should be resolved by looking at long-term data from the phase one study where we have more than 10 years. But of course, we also have other options that are viable. We have our second generation TKIs, dasatinib, probably being the best option and based on risk reward and flexibility in that it's a TKI that can be started at lower doses under some people's opinions. I think a standard dose is still most data-driven, 100 milligrams, but lower doses can be easily adapted if patient has tolerability issues or if there's a preference. Other second-generation inhibitors are also very good in frontline and offer some advantages, but also offer different adverse effects. We want to steer away from more serious and more morbid adverse effects like cardiovascular and metabolic disease. And of course, imatinib, which is our original TKI, really has the longest safety, is available, obviously, as a generic, and even ex insurance if patients have challenges, and offers very good efficacy and very predictable safety. So frontline therapy is complicated, probably the most complicated. From there, we look at response, comorbidities, potentially mutations. I think mutations previously were an important but seemingly minority of cases. I think that's becoming a bit more of a prominent story with more use of asciminib, where we have a more selective resistance profile. We don't have more resistance, but we have a more selective and perhaps a more TKI mutation dominant resistance signature, if you will. And we have this question about secondary mutations in the myeloid genome spectrum that is outside of BCR, but which may be relevant to choosing a TKI or how a patient's responding. How to exactly manage that, we're in the midst of sorting out. The patient has to be part of this discussion because this is a long journey. It's like running a marathon. So fully assessing the patient's comorbidities, particularly their cardiovascular status, seeing where they're at in their disease course, full discussion, and of course, full communication during treatment, because intolerance is an equal challenge to clinical response and clinical benefit. And making the careful decisions and striking that balance is probably the most important.
What differentiates these TKIs, such as dasatinib, ponatinib, imatinib, and others? What improvements have you seen with the later generation agents?
So the story of TKI development with CML unfolded with the first principle about developing a small molecule inhibitor against BCR-ABL. So imatinib was the canonical prototype molecule, which turned out to be very safe and highly effective and really revolutionary. So that is we call an active site inhibitor, binds the ATP binding pocket, has a predictable spectrum of mutations, which is broad, but still concentrated in about a dozen or so mutations, which are most prominent. From there, we developed second generation ATP competitive inhibitors, and those were dasatinib, nilotinib, and bosutinib. And they are all also ATP competitive or active site inhibitors. They have different properties with regards to a degree with the way which they bind the BCR-ABL kinase domain. They also have different adverse effects. And that's really where the risk-benefit analysis in comparative studies using them later line and then using them frontline came in. So imatinib has a predictable side effect profile with musculoskeletal symptoms, gastrointestinal side effects, fluid retention, and what I would call more challenges to consistent use and the patient's quality of life rather than significantly morbid adverse effects. But as we got into the second, and then I'll touch on the third generation inhibitors, we really did start to see some questions about more morbid side effects, things like vascular events, including vascular occlusion, pleural and pericardial complications, which we see primarily with dasatinib. The vascular complications were primarily with nilotinib, although were somewhat increased in general in the second generation group. And then with forbesutinib, we saw more intense versions of what we might see with imatinib, for example, more intense gastrointestinal toxicity, liver enzyme elevations, and the like. So you have a better drug with a tougher side effect profile. And there are ways around that with careful selection, potentially very careful onboarding of a drug, for the example of bosutinib, consideration of dose adjustment, if not in the beginning, soon thereafter for the other TKIs, and then careful screening of a patient's comorbidities, particularly their cardiovascular risk. Those drugs can be used quite safely. We then developed the third generation TKIs, and ponatinib really tried to solve the question of what do we do for selective resistance with the presence of a T315I mutation, which makes the binding of the ATP binding pocket complicated. So via a different molecular structure and binding at the active site, ponatinib was able to overcome that mutation and really not have any mutations for which resistance would be expected, and really offered a tremendous advantage for patients with highly resistant or highly heavily pretreated disease. It, of course, was studied all the way back into the frontline, but unfortunately, the adverse effect profile for that drug carried forward into earlier phase, earlier line therapies, and we had to halt those trials. So we still relegate ponatinib to later line therapy when really most drugs have already been used, and to advanced phase disease, where it serves patients very well, but it has the highest risk of cardiovascular and cardio-occlusive or vascular-occlusive events. Asciminib is in its own class. It's called a STAMP inhibitor, or specifically targeting a myristoyl pocket. So what is the myristoyl pocket? That's another region in the B-cerebral kinase that is targetable and was known from the very beginning to be a way to essentially inactivate B-cerebral, not by binding the ATP binding pocket, but by correcting a defect called the myristoyl pocket, which occurs with B-cerebral fusion, and essentially putting the kinase into an inactive state and generating, you know, programmed cell death, which is what we want against the leukemia cells. So that was a known target. Eventually, an oral, available, safe small molecule was developed. So we now have complementary drugs. We have active site inhibitors, we have allosteric or STAMP inhibitors. And the biggest challenge moving forward now is going to be, how do we use them together in sequence, in parallel, and how do we choose? There are yet other drugs in development in both classes, including novel allosteric inhibitors, several. And we, for a while, have seen the search for a better active site inhibitor. And there's some very good candidates in very far along in clinical development.
What are the clinical implications of the November 2025 generic dasatinib tablets FDA approval, specifically for patients who may require co-committent gastric acid-reducing agents?
In addition to the continued development of specific and maybe alternative approaches to B-cerebral inhibition, we've seen a very nice addition with multiple alternative formulations or alternative iterations of available drugs. We've seen approval of alternative forms of nilotinib, which are able to be taken without food exclusion. Importantly, as you mentioned, we have a formulation of dasatinib, one approved and several others that potentially in development, which now allows patients to have concomitant GI therapy to block stomach acid, to correct for stomach pH, which through histamine blockade or more commonly proton pump inhibition, both of which can affect the absorption of dasatinib. So what do these drugs allow us to do? They allow for a patient to overcome the barriers that can often be a challenge to getting full adherence, absorption, and effect from their drug, which can sometimes really be undermined, sometimes unknowingly, sometimes knowingly, by concomitant medications, difficulty with the dosing and the schedule, the requirements such as fasting. And that's not it. We have an oral liquid formulation of imatinib, which is available, which could be a very significant advance for example, pediatric patients or older patients who might have issues with mechanics of oral medications. There, again, will be more to come. And this is a really important space to develop as well, not just to develop better and more potent or alternative TKIs, but to optimize the drugs we already have or the compounds we already have.
With this approval, how are you approaching the usage of the dasatinib? Are you primarily using the newer formulation? Are you sticking with the older one? How do you tailor that decision based on the individual patient?
If a patient needs a drug for their CML and there's an alternative formulation, I think at present, with multiple iterations available, a discussion is always important. Having a long time without alternative formulation, we've grown pretty accustomed to counseling patients that they need to follow a certain schedule if they have to take a drug twice a day on an empty stomach, or to eliminate or minimize the effect of acid blockade, for example, and other drugs. With a new formulation, we can now either introduce that in the beginning, and I think that's part of our discussion currently, to say we have our standard formulations which have certain requirements, and if that isn't feasible, we can quickly pivot to alternate formulations. I think what's most important is looking at the bulk of patients who remain on treatment and whom we have questions about their ability to easily and most effectively take their drug, and also raise awareness. There may not be as much awareness of these novel agents, which are in the mix with generic forms of dasatinib and may not be as well understood. Some of them have slightly different dosing. There's different dosing, for example, numerically for one of the formulations of nilotinib. There's different dosing numerically for certain forms that may be developed regarding dasatinib. So we don't want confusion about the dose. We want clarity that we have multiple options and prescribe the right drug for the right patient for the right circumstance.
What is some ongoing research or novel classes of agents that you specifically are looking forward to that can help improve outcomes for this patient population?
So the research continues. We're not done, as many might potentially think we are in CML. We have, again, now a new class of the therapy with allosteric inhibitors, which I think we've seen better efficacy and what looks like better early safety. I think we want to confirm better long-term safety. And I think the holy grail for CML is, can we increase the cure fraction, which is going to occur if we're able to increase the number of patients who are eligible for what's called a treatment-free remission, wherein patients have had sufficient length of treatment, sufficiently deep remission for meeting defined requirements, who then elect to be monitored off therapy quite closely. I think there's some speculation that, for example, asciminib may have the potential of increasing the success of treatment-free remission for patients with what looks like the same remission they might have achieved with one of our earlier generation TKIs. That remains to be proven, but I think that's very exciting to think about. Despite better and safer drugs, we still have patients with resistance and moreover with intolerance. So I think continued development of alternate active site inhibitors. I'm quite excited about a drug from a company called Enliven, which is an ATP competitive agent, moving through trials quite nicely globally and proving to be very safe and highly effective in very challenging cases. We have drugs that are in this similar space that have been approved outside the US, such as olverembatinib, which has been studied primarily in Asia, but I think it requires further scrutiny and may have some unique features regarding its dosing and adverse effects, but certainly deserves a very close look. And then alternative allosteric inhibitors, I think that's probably the most rapid area of development. We have a very nice dossier from a company called Terns with a drug TERN-701, which may offer advantages over asciminib, which might be hard to imagine is possible, but it is. With data in patients who have previous asciminib and ponatinib exposure, with patients who could be candidates for asciminib, that seem to be doing quite well comparatively, even compared to earlier data, for example, from the asciminib phase 1 trial. So we may have a 2.0 version of allosteric inhibitors that could be an advantage or offer advantages over asciminib. There are other allosteric inhibitors in development as well, such as a compound from a company called TGRX. So I think we're, as I said, not done. We have still unmet need, particularly in the fact that the more options we have for our patients, the better. This spoiler riches really is for our patients, to offer them as many options as they can, because CML should be a highly treatable and a functionally curable disease for the most part. And the more options we have, the better we're going to do.
If you could give your colleagues who are approaching TKI selection in patients with CML, one take-home message, what would that message be?
Treatment for CML is like a marathon. So you have to be prepared and knowledgeable and thoughtful and patient. And you have to check in along the way because it seems like it may be very easy to treat, but we really get lost sometimes when we're not paying attention to side effects, when we're not paying attention to the response trajectory. We're losing track of our patients. We don't want to veer off course. We want to stay on course. So I'd recommend everyone kind of stay in the game, head in the game, and dialogue and monitoring and close follow-up. Tremendous success.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air. Check back throughout the week for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates on oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On X and Blue Sky, follow us at OncLive. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you like today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms, so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thank you again for listening to OncLive On Air.